Good morning. I won't introduce the panel again. You were here this morning when we got started. So we'll just ask Deborah to call the next case if y'all are ready. Both y'all ready?
Good morning. It was kind of interesting listening to the last issues before the court, because that was all contract construction, and instead of contract and that type of construction case, we're looking at statutory construction and really a conflict of laws case, which you don't see very often in a criminal setting, which is exactly what has happened when you look at the Wiebe
I've got a question.
Yes, ma'am.
I've never seen an indictment that looks like this before. To have theft, don't you have to have intentionally or knowingly without the effective consent of the owner?
That was actually an issue that I had brought up on directed verdict. Judge Sharon Wilson, the Honorable Sharon Wilson, decided that intent could be inferred by these non-consent tows that the factual, that came out in the actual testimony that the state presented. However, none of the witnesses, as you can see in the court's record, could testify that there was any intent to deprive the owner by my client, the appellant, George Wiebe, or by Metroplex Towing. In fact, that's actually my second point of error, is that no one could even identify the appellant, George Wiebe, as being the perpetrator of this alleged theft.
Well, you say this is in paramateria with the towing statute. Is this the language of the towing statute, or is this the language of
this is
theft?
The language of the Penal Code 31.03, which specifically states that an actor unlawfully appropriates property without the owner's effective consent, and that is what creates theft under the Penal Code. Under the Texas Transportation Code, you can have an improper or an illegal tow of a vehicle. And if you have an improper or illegal tow, whether it's with or without the consent of an owner, then you have a very specific penalty that's assessed, which is what we're arguing that should have been the proper remedy to these alleged towing violations, which is what this case was about. In fact, in the testimony, it even said that Detective Whitlock, who was the Fort Worth police detective, gave 41 Class C citations to the appellant, George Wiebe, on these very same people, Tommy Roberts, and I'm going to just use the ones that he was actually convicted on, Michael Mulholland, Lakita Stevenson, Stacy Sanders, and Nancy Franklin. 41 Class C citations, which is exactly what the Texas Transportation Code lays out is the proper remedy. It specifically says if a person commits an offense that violates an ordinance, resolution, order, rule, or regulation of a political subdivision adopted under Section 643.201 or 643.203, for which the political subdivision does not prescribe the penalty. Okay, and then the second part, there's all kinds of things here. Charges or collects a fee in a political subdivision that regulates the operation of tow trucks under Section 643.201 or 643.203. 3. Charges or collects a fee greater than the amount authorized under Section 643.205. 4. Charges or collects a fee in excess of the amount filed with the department under Section 643.207. Now, number 5 is the one that I'm going to kind of concentrate on, because I think that that's where the testimony kind of they really lay in that area. And it's violate Section 643.206, storage of non-consent tows. And 6, violates a rule of the department applicable to a tow truck and a towing company. And none of those actually say intent to deprive the owner, which is the theft charge. But none of the testimony actually came out saying that these owners knew that somebody intended to deprive them of their cars. If a towing company, we'll get to whether or not this was Metroplex Towing and George Wiebe at all, but if a towing company tows a vehicle there are several different situations where somebody can tow a vehicle. One, where a person calls up the towing company and says, I need my car towed, its battery went dead, please come and pick it up. That's a consent tow, which also is part of the Texas Transportation Code and is also regulated by Fort Worth ordinances, which is covered in number one of this section 643.253. And then you have the other type, which is what most people actually get angry about and you hear about in the news, the non-consent tows. And those are ones where you could be parked in a parking lot and there could be a sign up that says, no parking, this is going to be, you know, or your car is going to be towed, okay? Another one, car breaks down on a highway and the police say, call up and say, hey, we want to have this car towed because it's been here for so many days, we've put notice on it, okay? Then there's another situation. You can actually have a private property owner that says, I don't know where this car came from. It's on my property. I can't find the owner. Come and take the car. And there's three different, totally different situations where in all three situations, more than likely, the owner does not know and does not give consent to a towing company to tow the vehicle. Okay? And in all three of those situations, if you went by what the indictment has here, anybody who's a towing company owner, operator, driver of a truck could be charged in this indictment. And that's why I think this is such an important issue. We have a slippery slope here where if you go by the more general theft statute, which a lot of stuff falls into, whether it's the Texas Transportation Code or other ordinances and code violations that are found in our statutes, it is a very broad general statute, and you could try to infer, as the state alleged at the trial court level, that anyone that does not have true permission to do something would have intent to deprive the owner.
Where does it say without consent, without the effective consent of the owner?
As far as on number 5, it says violate section 643.206 of the Texas Transportation.
No, I mean in the indictment.
Oh, in the indictment. It says in the first paragraph, it says, with the intent to deprive the owner.
Where is without the effective consent of the owner?
It says, I'm trying to go back. It says, unlawfully appropriate the property. And in the actual theft statute, it says, without the owner's effective consent. So technically, it does not even run with the language of the theft statute, which is under the Penal Code of 31.03.
Is this the language of the Transportation Code, the unlawfully appropriate?
No, it's actually not. It says in the Texas Transportation Code, it just says that if they violate the non-consent tows, whether it's the storage or how they actually collect the fees, there's a lot of different things. As far as the Texas Transportation Code, what you're supposed to do with a non-consent tow, you are supposed to have certain licenses from the state, from the city of Fort Worth, from any municipality that actually has regulations with towing companies. You're supposed to have that first off. Then, if you have those stickers, permits, etc., somebody can call up in those three situations that I gave you earlier and say, I'd like to have this car towed. Now, in all three of those situations, you have to have other specifics. Not just one sign. You have to have multiple signs in some situations. You're not supposed to just have the owner say, I don't know who this car belongs to, come tow it, but that owner is supposed to actually take some type of steps to try to find the owner and then show that due diligence. And then in the third situation, where it's from a highway, a police officer is actually supposed to call certain towing companies that contract with a city or municipality or whatever that area is. And so that's kind of where we have this non-consent tow and all of these violations. And what was alleged through the testimony was that these individuals left their cars in certain locations. Towing company calls in that, oh, we have such and such vehicle. We don't even know necessarily who the owner is. We just have a license plate number, and we took it from a different location, okay? Now, the problem that arose from what the Detective Whitlock said was that Metroplex Towing, which is the company that it came out that possibly George Webby worked for or he was associated with, did not have the proper city permits. That was his crime. He didn't have the proper city permits. Okay? And the state is trying to allege that, well, he didn't have the proper permits and he lied on some of the call-ins as to where these cars were actually pulled from. There's no evidence anywhere in the testimony that that's the case. Not at all. The only testimony is that these individuals had a car, it was in a certain location, and their car went missing. Now, if a person does not follow, whether it's if it's a towing company or an individual that tows cars, if they do not follow the proper procedures, whether it's with the Texas Transportation Code, and then the Fort Worth Municipal Code kind of slides in underneath that, because the Texas Transportation Code gives the right to the city of Fort Worth to make these ordinances, if they don't follow that, this is the prescribed in Transportation Code Section 643.253, the prescribed problems, and then the prescribed remedies is very specific. It states that it is supposed to be a misdemeanor punishable by a fine not less than $200 or more than $1,000. Now, another set of remedies is an administrative violation through the Texas Department of Transportation. They can file suit against the towing company. And the third one is actually a civil liability suit. So that if these property owners, Tommy Roberts, Michael Mulholland, Lakita Stevenson, and Stacey Sanders, and Nancy Franklin had damages, they would be able to recover them. They would be able to recover them in a civil civil setting. It would be negligence on the towing company's part, but it's not a crime because they didn't have a permit. There's nowhere in the testimony that they truly intended to commit a crime. Now, if you're looking at the statutory interpretation and you specifically look at Cheney versus State, which sets out what is Texas's kind of codification or case law as to how we're supposed to interpret it, it's the in peri materia doctrine. And what that says, and it's codified in the government code 311.025 and 026, that when two statutes are in conflict, you want to try to put them together and see if they can be meshed together. If they cannot, if they are truly in conflict, then you must choose the specific over the general statute. And this is really important, in my opinion, in this case, because we're looking at a criminal case. We're not even looking at a civil case where the punishment or the actual damages may be as great. You were talking about somebody could go to jail. And so, according to Mills versus State, in a criminal case, you're to look at if there's a conflict in the two statutes, it is the due process right of the defendant for the court to take the lesser and the specific statute that has a lesser punishment. And in this case, it would be the Texas Transportation Code. And I actually think that's where the cops were going originally when they gave 41 citations. They were giving the Class C citations, which are specifically provided for in the Texas Transportation Code.
Which section again?
Texas Transportation Code, Section 643.253E. And now I will take note here that I have a footnote that just kind of to give knowledge to the court. There is also a recodification that I think is very important. In 2007, they actually recodified the Texas Transportation Code, making it more specific than it even was in the original document, and that is actually in the Occupations Code 2308 and thereon, and called it the Texas Towing Act. And I believe the legislative intent here was so that this very situation wouldn't happen. They could control what were the towing companies doing. What do we do in order to try to make sure that they're in alignment for everything? And I was going into the whole slippery slope. We have all kinds of areas where if one person illegally tows, they could be charged with a theft $1,500 to $20,000 because one car could be worth way more than $1,500. Let's say they towed a Mercedes that was way over $20,000. I mean, you're looking at a much higher charge than even a state jail felony, which is what my client was
okay,
facing.
Okay, let me ask you this. The enabling statute creating criminal district, was there a transfer order from the 213th to criminal district court number one?
Was there a transfer order?
From 213th to criminal district court number one.
I do not know.
Judge Wilson's the judge of criminal district court number one.
Yes, I don't.
This indictment was returned to the 213th. 213th has general jurisdiction over civil cases. Criminal District Court Number 1 was created specifically in the enabling statute as a criminal district court when they redid all the jurisdiction to give them misdemeanor jurisdiction. Did they also give them Criminal District Court Number 1 civil jurisdiction?
I don't believe they did give Criminal District Court Number 1 civil jurisdiction that I recall, but I don't know the answer to that, Your Honor.
Okay. And is there a transfer order transferring this to Criminal District Court Number 1?
I do remember that the indictment was returned on the 213th. I don't remember the situation unless that was just where they went to have they went to that grand jury for that session in order to try to get an indictment returned. And I think that was something about the grand jury. They wanted to try to get him indicted, and they just went to, I think, whichever grand jury.
Well, that's, I mean, that's just the way it works. The different grand juries, then they transfer.
Right.
So the 213th does have civil jurisdiction. It was created as a general jurisdiction court in the enabling statute. You haven't challenge the sufficiency of the evidence. You've only challenged the jurisdiction and sufficiency of the evidence as to the actor. But you're not challenging the intent to deprive the owner of the property since they offered to give these cars back. They held them for ransom, but offered to give them back. So is that intent to deprive them of the property?
We did actually challenge that on the directed verdict. I did not raise that on the direct appeal, although I do think it is it's a very, very good issue to raise. The intent was never truly spelled out as to how they intended to deprive these actors of the vehicles. And when I say they, whether it was Metroplex Towing or if it was George Webby, there was not truly ever a motive, a reason, or anything else. It was just the facts were, okay, somebody's car was missing. That was it. And they said it was in the property of Metroplex Towing. No one could provide a motive at all.
But wasn't the testimony that they said they would give the car back if they paid a certain amount of money?
Yes, a storage fee of I think it was like $200 in one instance. In some instances, they tried to contact these owners several times, and it came out on testimony that they never came to get the cars. They never said that there was going to be a price or not. And then another situation, one of the owners, and I raised that actually in my brief, Laquita Stevenson, was not actually an owner at all. She did not have the title to the car. It was in a Laura Blousey's name, and they did contact Ms. Blousey, and Ms. Blousey never said she wanted the car back or anything else or told them who actually she had given the car to. So I think there's a lot of different issues as far as that's even concerned, and we challenge that.
Can we even address them if they're not raised?
I do believe that it could be in y'all's discretion as far as an abuse of discretion. I think none of the there were several elements that were not met, and the main one was that the actual perpetrator, George Webby, was never identified. And if you don't even have a person, how do you even look at the rest of it? I mean, you've really got a problem when you don't have even a perpetrator to the crime.
Thank you.
May it please the court. I shouldn't say this, but this case just makes my head spin every time I look at it. I just think, But I want to say that I don't think it's actually all that complicated. When I wrote the brief, there are two issues that are raised. The first one is the trial court lacked jurisdiction because this was really just a transportation code violation, the doctrine of in peri materia. And then the second issue is, did we identify the defendant as the responsible party? That's all that's raised. When you look at it that way, I don't think it's that complicated. As to the in peri materia, that's a doctrine of statutory construction. And I think the thing that probably has confused me the most is when I'm not keeping that in mind. When you're looking at that doctrine, you're looking at what was the legislative intent with regard to these statutes. Did the legislature mean for basically one statute only to apply in that situation. You don't even need to look at the facts of this case. That's not the way you analyze it. You look at the two statutes. When you look at the two statutes, they just don't really have anything to do with each other. I mean, one is regulating towing and trying to promote compliance with those administrative regulations. The other is the general criminal theft statute.
Did they plead the theft statute?
Your Honor, I think they did. That's not an issue that
I know
was
it's
raised,
not
but I believe that they did because they talk about unlawfully appropriate
with
the intent to deprive. It does track the language of the theft statute.
Well, but you know, unlawfully appropriate has been held to be inadequate and has to be without the effective consent of the owner in the theft statute. Of course, it's not raised.
It's not raised.
So if it had been pled properly as a proper theft statute, then it wouldn't be imperium materia. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I think there. I mean, it's clearly that it's pled under the theft statute, and that's clearly what the conviction for is for the theft statute and the transportation code regulations and penalties regarding towing. They're just too completely. It's hard to even talk about it because they're just too completely different things. There are no overlap of any elements. It's not a lesser included offense of the other. There's just nothing about them that's the same. They don't have the same purpose, which is the primary thing you look at. And they also just really don't have anything to do with each other.
And the fact that they offered to give the property back sufficiency wasn't raised, so.
The sufficiency was only raised as to whether we tied the defendant to this, and that's what I addressed. I think, though, that the way I remember the record when I worked on this, you know, it's a weird deal. It's just
they held the cars hostages and offered to give them back in exchange for money. You got a kidnapping of
sure.
cars.
I only hesitate because the offer to give it back, I'm not sure to exactly what extent I would even say there was an offer to give it back because I know only one of these owners actually got their car back after paying the fee. One apparently got in a fight, disagreement over because the car was improperly towed. We don't even know what happened to that car. The other cars, we don't even know where they were. One car was found when the police went to investigate, and they impounded it. That's the only way she got that car back. So I kind of hesitate to make it sound like, oh, yeah, he was just going to give this back, because I don't think that was the case. I think this is a case where somebody goes out, and they see a car broken down on the side of the road, and they tow it. And, you know, when a car is in really bad shape, what are the odds somebody is going to respond to the towing letter and pay all the money? That's my take on the situation. Not in the record. You do with that what you will. But it's definitely an odd case. But as to the points that are raised, it's not that complicated. He is tied to this. His name, you know, George is listed on some of the towing records. When people called the towing business, he's the one that they spoke to. When the police call about it, he's the one who met the police, who provided the records. He's the one who goes down to get the take the towing truck in for its inspection by the city. So I think there was sufficient evidence that he's tied to it. I think there was sufficient evidence that he intended to deprive these owners based on his actions in the case and towing these illegally. And everything else. Again, the only thing that's really raised is in peri materia and was he tied to this? And I think the evidence supports Judge Wilson's conclusion that he was. And if the court doesn't have any other questions, I will gladly sit down and simply ask this.
Are you going to suggest they start pleading these as theft rather than unlawfully appropriate?
I will certainly pass that along. I suggest all kinds of things to them, quite honestly. But, you know, I can't promise what the result of my suggestions are going to be, but that's certainly something that we do talk about those things.
Anybody have any questions?
Thank you.
Hey, thanks.
Your Honor, she actually did bring up a couple of things that I want to touch on.
And I'm going to bring your attention to Cheney.
And in Cheney versus State, it really spells out what or how we're supposed to look at this in peri materia doctrine. And it states that it does not matter whether or not statutes were actually codified or drafted at the same time, whether they were even, as if they put it, were meant to cover the same thing when they drafted them. However, you can have two statutes that, in the end, they do overlap or they do conflict with each other.
But here, if we follow your reasoning, anytime anybody uses a tow truck to steal a car, then they have committed a violation of the municipal ordinance and can't be prosecuted for theft. And I just don't think that's what the legislature intended.
Well, the legislature, I think they were intending to try to curb this kind of abusive, I guess, the tow truck drivers could have. I mean, they obviously, tow truck drivers can have a lot of power. They're driving around with a tow truck. They could tow any car at any time. And that's why the legislature even codified the Texas Towing Act and actually made it stricter in the long run. Now, I believe that what you're saying, Justice Dauphineau, is correct. I mean, we can't have tow truck drivers completely alleviated of the penal code. I mean, that's not, I don't think that's what I'm arguing. What I'm arguing is in this situation, in this factual situation, that was not the case. Under the test, or in the testimony that was presented, everything pointed to, including the testimony from the detective and the Fort Worth, and he was the permit guy, Gerald Pruitt. I don't have the notes in front of me. He said that they did not have a permit. And they were trying very hard to actually be in alignment. When I say they, I'm talking about Metroplex Towing, to be in alignment with the laws. They had all their Texas actual Department of Transportation permits. They were lacking the Fort Worth permits. And once Detective Whitlock, who was a Fort Worth PD officer, she testified, you know, she went out, started talking to, and she did talk to Mr. Webby, that she did say that she talked
but
to him.
But that's factual, that's sufficiency of the evidence. That's legal and factual sufficiency of the evidence. That's not in peri materia.
Well, in this situation, I believe you can have that conflict. Specifically, what they're looking at is these non-consent tows, and that's what this covers. First, towing companies obtain property, okay, so they appropriate the property. Here it's a non-consent tow, so they do it without the owner's effective consent. I mean, we're tracking the language of both of the codes. Now the intent...
Well, what's the theory behind the towing statute when there is a sign that's at the appropriate height with the appropriate wording and telling you where to get your car, because that's got to be on the sign, where you can get your car, then that essentially is by parking in the wrong place. You have, it's like DWI, it's an implied consent to have your car towed if you insist on parking in a place they tell you they're going to tow it.
To me, one of the best examples, and I don't know if this kind of answers your question, but for example, in Dallas, I don't know if y'all remember, it was in the news last year at the OU-Texas game. People were parking, you know, where they thought they were supposed to be parking. Dallas tow truck drivers started towing vehicles, okay? Instead of charging those tow truck drivers with theft, they actually charged them with Class C violations, which is exactly what that statute says to do. Just because somebody tows a truck does not mean it rises to the level of theft. And I think that's where we have this conflict between the two statutes. Maybe they need to rewrite the Transportation Code statute to make it a little bit more specific. Okay, if you do it with this, you know, and as long as it's not proven that there was intent to deprive, then you're going to be punished under Class C. You know, and then a theft is always going to be much more general and much more broad. But the way that the Transportation Code was written in 2006, which is when we were looking at this case, it was very specific that was supposed to be the punishment. And you don't necessarily even have to look at the facts. I mean, they were in conflict. They were in clear conflict.
Okay.
Anything further?
Any questions? All right. Thank you. Thank you. Your case is submitted. We appreciate your argument.
Thank you.
You are released to go about your business, and this court will be adjourned.
All right.